so your poor, frail old mother cannot pay the mortgage. I shall fling you both out into the snow, as sure as me name's Squire Jasper. Unless you agree to be mine. All mine, me proud beauty. Come on. Come on. Give me your answer now.
Oh, anything for Mummy, but I think you've got the wrong house.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddock, and Joan Sims in...
Right, stop messing about.
Yes, it's Stop Messing About, introduced, as always, by your and my favorite announcer, Douglas Hotlips Smith.
No, he's not.
Twice winner of the Douglas Smith Award for charm and grace of movement. President of the Friends of Douglas Smith Society.
Raving megalomaniac.
Hello.
I will now sing If I Ruled the World.
Are you raving mad?
You're here to announce nothing.
You're going to be like that. I shall retire to the announcer's room and practice my articulation. Makes dignified exit with head held high.
I hope he draws the curtains.
Look at him trying to walk tall again.
He's getting ideas above his station.
I blame that Joan Sims, you know. She's been egging him on.
Oh, never.
Shameless.
Oh, hello, Joanie. Oh, how lovely to see you.
Yeah, smile when you say that.
I was. Smiling him all the top of my head will fall off.
Well, if it does, dear, wait for the laugh before you pick it up.
No! Oh, you sharp out the knife box. Oh.
Listen, why have you two been upsetting Douglas?
Ah, upsetting him. We haven't, have we, Hugh? No.
No,
well,
no.
Then why has he gone all pink round the back of his neck?
He's vain about the collar size.
I heard that. Moves boldly forward in brackets, filling the assembled company with terror and dread. But now we turn with infinite relief to our town and country section, a rare privilege. The Earl of Shotterley has graciously offered to show us his ancestral seat.
Welcome to Talpurgis Hall. As I stand here by the window of the weapons room, you may be interested to know what I'm holding in my hand. Of course, if this program was on television, as it's supposed to be, you'd be able to see it. However, I'm holding in my hand a brass farthingale warmer. And it's nothing short of a public scandal that you can't actually see it. What is it, Figgins? Figgins, what is it? Hey?
Her ladyship. And the gardener.
Oh, not again. Well, Pickens, I'm afraid there's only one thing for it. Yes, and hurry up. Hurry up before they ruin the lawn. Off you go. Now this charming piece. You'll notice if I shake it, it rattles. Oh dear, a bit of it's dropped off. Anyway, my coat of arms is embossed on the lid, which of course you can't see. Neither can I. That's the bit that's dropped off. However, really? Figgins, you dunderhead! I meant him, not her. Don't be impertinent, Figgins. And stop waving your fowling piece. Oh, dear me. Oh, dear, there goes another bit. Well, there's not much more I can say about this brass farthingale warmer. There's not much of it left. But if anyone has a brass farthingale they would like warmed, I'm open to the public every Wednesday, 12 and 6, including a quick dip in the moat. Half a crown extra if you want to see my monk soul.
And now it's Crackerjack and Ori with Mother Time. When the music stops, Maud Nethersoul will be back on top of her prefabricated toadstool to tell you another of her prefabricated stories.
Hello, Tinies. Now I want you all to spread out and form a great big circle, because that's what I'm doing here in the studio. Of course, in my circle, there's lots of little people I can't see, because they're fairy people. But I know they're here, because fairies are everywhere. And today I'm telling a fairy story about a very naughty little gnome called Sydney, who was always getting the fairies into trouble. When they sprinkled the morning dew on the flowers, Sydney used to drink it. Then off he'd go, chasing the birds and teaching them songs that made even the robins blush. Which is why, to this very day, they all have red fronts. In the end, the fairy queen, whose name was Phyllis, sent for Sydney and said, "It has reached our royal ears that a name is getting himself a bad name." Or vice versa. "What have you to say for yourself?" And Sydney said,
"Of the very boys, I've avoided them myself, I find it hard."
And the queen said, "I see. Then it is our royal wish that you open a fairy cobbler's shop." "Where you can bang away to your heart's content." And now, here's a song for the slightly older children.
Oh, no, then, I'm going to let her sing again.
I took my love to Primrose Hill upon St. Swithin's Day, and pointed out the woody woods we passed along the way. But he wouldn't. I took my love to Turnpike Lane when Halloween was nigh. I thought I'd seen a twinkle in my roguish lover's eye, but I hadn't. I took my love to Potter's Bar when Michaelmas was near, but though he seemed quite willing, I'd gone off the whole idea, so we didn't.
Yes, once again, it's time for me to turn over and reveal the Douglas Smith pull-out supplement. And on page one, tips for the housewife.
Have you got an old chest that's just hanging about impressing nobody? Painted lilac and attached brass handles. Your friends will be astounded.
Say that again.
For that soft, springy feel under your carpet, there's nothing quite like dry rot.
In summer, we're all bothered by flies in the kitchen. Now, there's a very easy way to get rid of them.
Put a bucket of fertilizer in the living room.
If your pipes keep bursting, why not change to cigars?
Draw sticking? Talcum powder on your runners will soon stop that.
And finally, a word to gardeners. If your irises are affected by early frost, try double glazing your spectacles.
Page two. Sir Inigo Parchmutter, QC, discusses another typical legal problem.
Thank you. Now, Mr. A, in the course of his duties as a stunt pilot, had occasion, whilst looping the loop, to fall out of his aeroplane at 30,000 feet. As luck would have it, he had barely fallen 90 feet before re-encountering the aeroplane, now at the base of its loop. The propeller, chancing to catch his braces, exhibits 1 to 75, not only gave him a dizzy few moments, but also tore off his trousers and, indeed, the rest of his clothing. Otherwise unharmed, Mr. A resumed his descent, pulling at his ripcord while he still had time. Meanwhile, on the ground below, Miss B, a schoolmistress and spinster, was relaxing in her bath, anticipating nothing more stimulating than the prospect of using her new loofah. Rejoining Mr. A, we find his descent somewhat slowed down by the impact with the thatched roof of Miss B's cottage. Miss B, busily soaping her metatarsals, was somewhat put out by a naked man plummeting through the ceiling and joining her in the bath. Diffidently, she inquired of him his business. Mr. A, for it was indeed he, did his best to satisfy her curiosity, which took some considerable time. The case was tried at Belchester Assizes before Mr. Justice Flute, who demanded a reenactment of the entire incident. Because he rather liked that sort of thing. Thank you.
Once again, we open the floodgates of melody to be swept away on a tide of full-throated, bewitching song. Peter, Paul, and Mrs. Nosepoultice.
Two by two, flies in the Vanderbilt, two by two, flies in the Vanderbilt, two by two, and blue bottles in your
yard. I'd change my milkman if I were you. Now, what plaintive ditty are you going to eviscerate for us this week?
I beg yours?
Sing.
Oh, well, here's a song we came across when we was doing a concert in Dead Man's Gulch, just outside Bootle. And it goes like this.
On top of Old Smoky, all covered in snow, there's no place for courting at 30 below.
The snow gets in places too awful to tell,
and you feel like a sequel.
Just as you get started, the temperature falls.
It freezes your fingers,
and that isn't all.
When you see Julie Andrews, then tell her, oh please,
if she climbs every mountain,
she'll come down on her knees.
She'll come down on her knees.
And now we present our film adaptation in the series we call Groovy Movie. Lately, there have been a lot of hard-bitten, remorseless war stories. Here's the hardest, most bitten, and entirely lacking in morse of the lot. The Dirty Half Dozen.
The time, 1942. The place, the War Office, London. My name is Dirty. Captain Dirty of RADA. I'm an acting captain, of course.
Ah, come in, Dirty. Sit down. This may be a bit tricky.
He was right. There was no chair.
I mean, look at your record. You're a troublemaker, Dirty. Still, I feel there must be some good in you. I knew your mother, you know.
Well, you would say you're my father.
Yes. Very tricky mission coming up, Captain.
He paced the room, his hands sunk deep in his pockets.
I have been given a very tricky and dangerous operation.
I suspected that by the way you were pacing.
No. In North Africa.
Go on, Dan.
Pay attention.
Go on, Dan.
Pay attention. In North Africa, the Germans have a secret depot for storing observation balloons.
Oh.
Yes. I want you to go over there and blow them up.
Oh. 1 month later, in a top-secret training establishment on an allotment in Penge, Captain Dirtier took out a theodolite and surveyed his platoon.
First, there was 2375 Private Alf Parts. And if you think we're going to make anything of that, you don't know the truth.
I was court-martialed and disgraced for being AWOL. They don't like wolves in the British Army. But now I have been given new hope.
Yes, in this platoon you'll have a chance to prove that you're a man. Hey. Not now. I'll look at your pay book later. Second in line was 9325 Private Butch O'Hooligan, a blue-jowled, foul-mouthed, hard-drinking thug.
Reporting for duty, sir.
With a rather effeminate voice.
Then there was Sergeant Hulk, a man who stood over 6 feet in his socks, but only 5'1" out of them.
Well, I've got very thick socks, and I. All right, you men. Attention. Left turn, quick march. Quick march! Oh, all right then, Simon says. Quick march.
Dirty's half dozen, or the smutty six as they quickly came to be known, began their training at once.
Day by day I could see the men changing. My office was in the shower room. I say, O'Hooligan! Step over here.
Sir?
He came to attention in front of me, dripping water. There was something about him that was different. I put my finger on it immediately. Why? Come on, now, why? Why are you wearing full battle dress under the shower, O'Hooligan?
Well, my ground sheet's at the laundry, sir.
Ah, right, sir.
Sir, I can't stand this training, sir. This learning to kill and fight and do fancy embroidery. Why, I'm not that sort of man. In fact, I'm not any sort of man.
No, but I like the way you're shaping, O'Hooligan. 2 pages later, North Africa. A violent sandstorm has been raging for days.
Swish, swish, howl. Pitter, patter, pitter, patter. Oh, I do enjoy this.
Nice. One after another, my platoon and I crawled into the bed of an old, dried-up wadi.
Oh, nasty.
The storm raged on about us.
Swish, swish. Oh. Howl. Howl, swish.
Just let your mark in it, a big load of wind.
I can't stand it. This relentless Douglas Smith howling, probing, finding its way under my uniform. No food, no water. I haven't shaved for days. Just look at my legs. Come, take shelter.
Yeah. Look over there. There's a small hotel. Ain't a wishing well. I wish that we was there together.
Very good. Thank you very much indeed. Yes, sir. Very good indeed. A small hotel. Yes, right. I'll knock on the door.
Greetings, Effendi. I am Mustafa Ben Hussein, owner of this small but select establishment. After the scorching sands, you must be somewhat dry.
Well, we were. I'm surprised to find an oasis here.
Ah, yes. Well, there wasn't one until I came. It's very singular, you know. Whenever I set foot, the desert blossoms.
Yes, I know.
My charges are 17 and 6 a night, including shower.
Oh. We only want to ask the way to the secret German depot.
Oh, certainly, yes. Go straight on over the sand dunes. Sharp left by the Mirage of Bay Grable. That was left behind by the 7th Welsh Fusiliers.
Yes.
The platoon marched on and...
Hold it.
Oh, gladly, monsieur.
Look, over there, two figures staggering towards us through the swirling sand. Who can they be?
Oh, hello, I'm Suleiman and this is my friend Saeed. Oh, hello. Oh, how
our bone at a shufty, you dolly old forage cat.
Yeah. Well, you don't sound like Arabs to me. You sound more like a couple of Caucasians.
Oh, she bold.
No, no, she's right. We are. We're British.
Yes, we got adopted by wandering bedridden Arabs.
Bedouin.
Oh, yes. Yes. He was adopted by Bedouin Arabs.
Yes.
Well, he got adopted, actually. I was more your friend of the family.
So you've travelled around a bit?
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes.
Mostly by plane. He hates boats.
Oh, I hate it. One thing I hate, it's a boat.
Yeah, tell her why.
No, I don't...
Go on, you can't keep it hidden for the rest of your life. Go on. It's got to come out sometime. Go on. Hello.
Yes, all right.
Go on, just a minute. Out.
Well... Well, see, it was this friend of mine.
Yes.
Merchant seaman, he was.
Yes. Called Clint. 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 Tell her his name.
Clint. Yes. Merchant seaman,
yes. Merchant
seaman,
he was.
He said he couldn't stow me away in the bilges of his ship.
Yes, so you were.
Because, you see, I had this hankering for foreign parts.
Yes, anchored. Yes, no. Anchored. Anchored away, he did.
Yes.
Anchored away.
So, no. So, me and him, we crept aboard this ship, you see.
Then he took you down below, didn't he?
Down below, yes, he did.
Yes, imagine it, ducky, down below in the bilges he was. 2 whole weeks, pitch black, his lallies pressed against his chest.
But Clint popped in every day just to keep me company. Do you know, I think I would have lost my reason if it hadn't been for Clint.
Tell her the rest. Go on. Tell her what happened then. Go on. Tell her. Go on, tell her.
No, but it's hurtful.
Tell her what happened when you crept up on deck after 2 weeks. Go on.
Well, Clint, for reasons of his own, he deceived
me. Deceived him, he did.
Yes. Because when I got up on deck, I realised we wasn't where I had been led to believe.
Was there at all?
No.
Where were you?
Hidden on board a 5-ton cruiser at the National Boat Show. Yes.
Well, after that irrelevant diversion, we do have a sketch to get on with. Captain Dirty's platoon are surveying the secret German depot. They're hidden behind a mighty desert hillock.
There's only one way to get into this depot. We all march in backwards, whistling Colonel Bogey. If that doesn't confuse them, nothing will.
So, English pigs... No offence, of course. Yes, you thought you would confuse us? Answer me, Sergeant. This is where your actual theatrical training comes in.
Yeah, are you Rommel?
It is so. Quick switch back.
Ooh.
Back again. Aha!
Cool.
Aha, so. It's hardly worth the trouble with dialogue like this.
You're too late, Rommel. Before you caught us, we planted a bomb under the main petrol dump.
I don't believe you, English dog. On the other hand, I'm prepared to keep an open mind.
With one bound, they were all free. The only casualty was verisimilitude. And one of the platoon who bought it during the fighting sold it at a profit and retired to Switzerland.
Men, there are 24,516 miles between us and Cairo.
That's the long way round, of course, but it's prettier.
They took the short route. The Germans chased them all the way. Benghazi. Tobruk.
I think we've left a Jerry behind, sir.
Oh, blast.
Euston Station.
We've blown up 15 trains, destroyed 10 miles of track, and shot all the guards, sir. And now we're... Yeah, hang on. Euston Station. Oh, no.
Would you believe we made a boo-boo?
Mr. Paddock appeared by kind permission of the Doily Cart Ram Jam Rascals. Cigarettes were by Embankment Butts Limited, high-class specialist in used tobacco. And the delectable Miss Sims again stole the show, albeit against feeble opposition.
Oh, thank you, Douglas. You know you have a certain je ne sais quoi.
Yes, and we all know where he wears it, don't we?
That was Stop Messing About with Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddick, Joan Sims, and the Max Harris Group. The script was by Johnny Mortimer and Brian Cook and Miles Rudge. The producer was John Simmons.